I'm Senior Portfolio Strategist Jim Haskell, and I want to welcome you to the fourth quarter CIO call. In today's call, Karen will touch on the global outlook, Greg will discuss the next phase of the AI boom, and then both Bob and Greg will talk about how we're thinking about allocating capital in 2026, both strategically and tactically.
You know, thank you, Jim. But I think that before we dive into things, I just want to take a second and reflect on where we've been and where we're going. 2025 was a really big year for Bridgewater. It was our 50-year anniversary. We opened our New York City office. We completed the Ray transition, which then led us to completely simplify our governance and our financial structure. And what was incredible is that in response to all of that, our entire leadership team reinvested in the business. And at the end of this year, 60% of the employees of Bridgewater are going to own stock in Bridgewater. It's pretty amazing that when you sit here on your 50th anniversary, and for me, it feels like the startup that I walked into 40 years ago, but with, you know, four generations of depth, 50 years of experience, and resources. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to get things wrong. We will definitely get things wrong. It's in the nature of what we do to get things wrong. The key is to learn from it and improve. And what I see in our team is a real hunger to do that.
Now, let me bring in Karen. And Karen, let's turn now to the global outlook and what we're seeing in the world right now.
Thanks, Jim. It's great to be here. We head into 2026 with a world that has been radically reshaped by modern mercantilism and by AI. These two forces, they're everywhere. They're rewiring everything. And it's not possible to trade global markets anymore without deeply understanding these forces. So what's the next chapter of these two forces? Where are these two forces going? As we look at these two forces, they are both generating non-cyclical, for many people, existential feeling pressures to spend money in the economy. And that's propelling the expansion forward. As it does that, it's creating an expansion with a certain shape and size, and that's building up risks along the way because of the particular shape and size of this expansion. We have relatively easy monetary and fiscal policies into a generational size AI CapEx boom at the same time that we keep having very high needs for fiscal policy, already very high government debts, political pressures. So our approach as we look at this world is two things. One, you have to build a deep understanding of this new reality. You can't trade markets otherwise. But at the same time, you have to have the humility to recognize that there's a lot of uncertainty here, and you have to build portfolios resilient to where the world might go. And you're going to hear myself, Greg, and Bob speak about both sides of what's really the same coin here. So let me start by these two forces, modern mercantilism and AI, where we see them going. So modern mercantilism, look, China's operated this way for a long time. And the U.S. has kind of been inching in this direction. But in 2025, the U.S. sort of fully shifted into modern mercantilism. And we coined this term to describe this environment that we're in. What we mean by that is really that the state's role is to pursue wealth, strength, self-sufficiency, and to do that really unilaterally, to go after these things, right? And you know, it's a constant flow. Like as Greg talked about, the world is changing so rapidly. We're getting such a constant flow of information. The pace at which we're seeing things in the world and thinking we got to incorporate these into our process is rapid. So we've really benefited from having 50 years of systemization and then thinking, how do we organize all of these new activities? And what you're seeing here is that we've sort of divided all of this set of information into key areas where the U.S. is choosing to advance these goals via kind of certain paths, right? The U.S. is choosing to try to avoid trade deficits because of the view that national wealth is maximized that way, self-sufficiency is maximized that way. The U.S. is choosing to protect strategic sectors, going after things like self-sufficiency, things like rare earths, things about semiconductors, and using transactional and at times even coercive foreign policies to get at these goals. So a lot's happening. U.S. has fully kind of shifted into this paradigm. What's the next chapter? Where is this going? As we look into 2026, the big thing that's occurring is that the world is now responding to the U.S. having fully shifted in this direction in 2025. And that is generating the next set of spending and of capital flows. So the U.S. mercantilism is begetting more mercantilism from the rest of the world, right? And emboldening the United States is really imploring every country in the world to look inward. And what we didn't really see last year was a lot of retaliation right? Higher and higher tariffs, not accelerating. What we saw instead is countries looking inwards and saying, wait a minute, no one can afford to rely on exports. The U.S. is the biggest trade deficit country. It doesn't want a bigger and bigger trade deficit. China is at everyone's heels, becoming more and more competitive. Once supply chains have been weaponized, nobody can afford to ignore those vulnerabilities. Everybody needs to spend to deal with that. And once the U.S. security umbrella has been shaken as it has been, no one can afford not to be worrying about defense and national security. So you're seeing these pressures turn into really what are multi-year commitments to be spending down these paths. Infrastructure, national security, rare earths. These are multi-year commitments. And importantly, they're coming from what are often been historical net savers. Countries like Germany, Korea, Japan, that have historically exported capital because there wasn't really a need for it inward, have instead really needed to kind of raise the returns on what can be generated internally, try to keep the capital inside instead of sending it out. So these are both important drivers for what we see for global growth and inflation, as well as important cross-border capital drivers that are determining kind of which countries, what the relative pressures are. Let me go to AI. This is the second important force, and Greg will talk about it as well, but AI is also in a new phase. What has occurred is that scaling laws have continued to prove true. In other words, there is a sense that if you could just spend enough, and that really requires exponential spending, that's what the scaling is about, you could be at, you know, kind of the breakthrough of what is likely to be the most transformational technology that we've seen, certainly in our lifetimes. And so that is creating what we've called these resource grab dynamics, right? Because if you need to spend exponential amounts and not spending in the physical world, there's a limit of how much can be spent in the physical world. There's only so much energy, components, memory. So that's the resource grab. Grab everything you can, spend as fast as you can. You get that mentality in this sort of quote we have here, which is, you know, the CEO of Alphabet saying the risk of underinvesting is dramatically greater than the risk of overinvesting. That's these competitive dynamics where if one player is investing, you don't want to be behind and be investing less than them. So at this point, that spending is already turning into actual impact on U.S. growth. It's spending that is becoming a bigger and bigger pie of what the economy is like. You can see this acceleration in how this AI CapEx spending is affecting U.S. growth. And this is both literally translating into spending, putting physical pressure on inflation and physical things, things like electricity that are often very salient to households. And this is primarily the spending of a few large hyperscalers. Going forward, it'll be a lot more than that. You're going to get sovereign spending in order to make sure they don't fall behind on national security. You're going to get companies that today don't see themselves as AI players realizing that they're at existential risk. If they don't spend, this is going to keep accelerating.
Greg, let's turn to you. You've been leading our AI efforts. You've built a team around you. Walk us through this next phase of the AI boom.
Sure. Let me start with how we're trying to get our hands around what's going on. I think understanding this technological transformation is one of the most important things you need to do to be an investor at this point. You can't avoid it. Three ways we're getting there. One is being practitioners. As you know, we built IO Labs. We've been thinking about this question for a very long time. And we've got 50 people focused solely on how to build an artificial investor that's amazing, that eventually can outcompete all human investors. That's the goal of that team. Huge challenge in using the tools and a lot of understanding the tools that goes into that. We're also really, last year was a huge ramp up in using AI to increase the productivity of human investors in a very significant way. So though, as practitioners, we've got our hands in the pot there. So let me take you a little into what we're seeing. In terms of the phase, the AI boom is getting more dangerous for reasons that Karen laid out. Last year, I said sort of the bubble's ahead of us. Like, we're not in a bubble, the bubble's ahead of us. And what I was trying to get at then is there was a lot of known things that were going to happen in 2025. The investment was going to happen. There's a massive amount. It was under discounted in the markets. Today, I still think that's largely true, and we can get into the subtlety of that, but it is definitely more dangerous. Now everybody is on it. There's a huge resource grab phase. The capital expenditures are going to be at record capital expenditure levels across the U.S. economy and across the globe. The need for capital is growing and massive. You went from Microsoft and Google being huge savers that benefited financial markets because they were doing big buybacks and building up big balance sheets of cash and so on, to now they're spending that all. And they need to raise money in aggregate in the ecosystem. In fact, by our estimates in 2027, AI capital needs are going to be larger than all the needs this year in the U.S. corporate bond market. Big deal. And more is priced in. And so that leads us to more winners and losers than necessarily the straight line of winners that we've had. So those things make this situation a little bit more dangerous and so critical.
Thank you, Greg. Well, Bob, let's turn to you now because we've heard both the global outlook, we've heard a deeper dive into all the dynamics into AI that we're seeing. So now, how do we think about this in terms of allocating capital in 2026?
Getting to current actions, when I think about resiliency, diversification and agility are always key to building a resilient portfolio. And today, I think diversification is crucial. Not only is it risk reducing, but because of valuations, it has been return enhancing. And we expect it actually to be that way in continuing into the future. But four specific types of diversification to pursue. Number one is balance. Balancing exposure to growth and inflation. Because when you look at modern mercantilism and you look at the AI revolution, the tech revolution, I mean, that could pop out to either inflationary or deflationary. It could pop out to too strong growth or weak growth, right? In fact, Karen talked about you have both at the same time going on right now, right? And so balancing growth and inflation is the starting point. The second thing is geographic diversification. Geographic diversification is the only way to actually diversify risk premiums across assets is you have to go across countries and capture the differences in economic cycles and monetary conditions. But also modern mercantilism and the tech revolution are going to create massive differences in outcomes for countries and sectors and companies. And so geographic diversification is really a no-brainer. We've talked for years about currency, right? And going back to the 90s, understanding what is your risk-neutral currency position. Only if you understand your risk-neutral currency position do you know if you're taking currency risk. And currency is a separable, independent source of return and risk in a portfolio. Know your risk-neutral position. Probably go to that and only deviate based on really a clear view and the ability to execute on that view. Again, balancing currency exposure in the last year has added 200 basis points relative to a concentrated position in dollars. And I think this is really unique to this environment, is thinking about diversification in terms of technology and specifically focusing on technology. When you look at, you know, some heavily private market investors, they're underweight technology. When you look at some traditional asset allocations, they're overweight and too concentrated in technology. Thinking specifically about technology and your AI exposure is really important.
Great. To all of our CIOs, Bob, Greg, Karen, thank you very much.